From Connellsville to Lansford, Latrobe to Grantham, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, in an effort to improve understanding of our system of American government, a bipartisan group of former Pennsylvania congressmen have formed the Pennsylvania Civics Project. Phil English is here with details. That impact fee on natural gas drillers has generated a record amount of revenue. Eric Montardi and Hannah Bowser of the Allegheny Institute have the numbers. And Americans for Prosperity is calling on Governor Wolf and the General Assembly to enact sweeping reforms to the state's tax system. Ashley Klingensmith of Americans for Prosperity has a Lincoln Radio Journal commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to Phil English in just a couple of minutes, but first we have news headlines from patownhall.com. A federal appeals court this past week upheld a lower court ruling that dismissed a suit filed by several trucker organizations against the Pennsylvania Turnpike, which deflects some toll revenue to non-turnpike-related projects. The truckers had contended the diversion of toll revenue to PennDOT and to mass transit agencies was illegal. But the court held such use of toll funds is authorized by Congress and therefore did not violate the rights of truckers and other motorists. Had the truckers been successful in court, it could have cost the Turnpike billions in lost revenue. President Trump was in Pennsylvania this past week visiting Royal Dutch Shell's ethane cracker plant in Beaver County. The plant will transform natural gas into various other forms for use, among other things, the manufacture of plastics. Construction of the facility has created hundreds of construction jobs, and officials estimate some 600 permanent jobs will result from development of the facility. David Spiegelmeyer, president of the Marcellus Shell Coalition, lauded the facility as state-of-the-art and vowed to push forward with development of the Commonwealth's natural gas industry, despite critics, some of whom showed up to protest the facility and the president's visit. The Commonwealth Foundation is challenging a plan by Governor Tom Wolf that the foundation says will drastically reduce the ability of Pennsylvania families to send their kids to charter schools. Nathan Benefield of the Commonwealth Foundation said the governor's plan would cut funding for charter schools, place a cap on enrollment, and place a moratorium on the formation of cyber charter schools. All such schools have seen a surge in popularity, but they are strongly opposed by the State Teachers Union, which contributed heavily to Governor Wolf's campaigns for office. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. High schools are not teaching the fundamentals of American government, and the result is generations of young adults who don't know the basics of how our system operates. The State General Assembly has recognized the problem and has directed the Education Department to take action. Now a bipartisan group of former Pennsylvania congressmen have formed the Pennsylvania Civics Project to help develop the curriculum. Phil English served as a congressman from northwestern Pennsylvania. He is one of the group's members and is here to talk about the project. Phil, welcome back to Lincoln Radio Journal. Phil, tell us a bit about the project. What is it called and what are the goals?
Pennsylvania Civics was launched by a group of former members of Congress led by former Congressman Jim Gerlach to try to support the effort to reintroduce civics into the classroom in Pennsylvania. The General Assembly passed Act 35, which has put that process into place, and we have offered ourselves up as resources to work with our coalition members, which include the Committee of 70, the National Constitution Center, the Rendell Center, to help develop professional development for teachers, help develop the curriculum, support a broad effort to educate students on how our American system works, how our democracy makes decisions, the limitations on government, the structure of the powers of our federal state government, an understanding of federalism, all of the basic components of civics, we think need to be re-exposed to our students at the high school level.
Who all are involved in this? You are part of a group of former members of Congress. So tell us who from Pennsylvania, former Congress members are involved in this effort.
We are a bipartisan group. In addition to Jim Gerlach and myself, we have Chris Carney, a Democrat from the Northern Tier. We have Joe Hoffel from the Philadelphia suburbs. We have Todd Platts, now a judge, from York. We have Melissa Hart from Pittsburgh and a couple of others. We are a diverse group of former members from Pennsylvania, loaning our time and attempting to use our contacts to attract additional resources and additional leadership into this effort. We are reaching out to the State Department of Education, which has been a good partner that has been looking to utilize us in a way that can bring us into classrooms, utilize us to talk to teachers, and also help guide this overall effort. This, by the way, is also tied into a broader effort nationally by the U.S. Former Members of Congress, which is a large non-government organization consisting of former members that have particularly supported this effort in other states, including Iowa, Kentucky, and New York.
Phil, back when you and I were in high school, and no jokes about how long ago that's been, but when you and I were in high school, we always had structured classes called civics. And in those civics classes, high school students were taught the very basics of our American governmental system. Are those classes still being held?
Much of that curriculum has disappeared. It's been crowded out by other priorities. It has been crowded out by other focuses. It's been crowded out through a series of education changes and reforms so that it's no longer as prominent in the curriculum. And in high schools, now students are barely exposed to civics. This is a disaster because what we're discovering in polls is that people graduating from high school have very little understanding or contact with our system and very little understanding of its philosophical underpinnings. When you think about that, that is hobbling people coming out of high school in being effective citizens, in knowing how to achieve things through the government process, even knowing what to ask for. This is a real weakening of our democracy, and we think civics education is fundamental to whatever else is on someone's agenda for democratic reform. This is fundamental.
We are talking with former Congressman Phil English about the Pennsylvania Civics Project. And Phil, as a student of history, which I know you are, talk for a minute or two about our founding fathers and how important it is for our citizenry to not only understand the foundations of our government, but to be able to intelligently, keyword intelligently, actively participate in it.
What we need to remember is that the founding fathers had a profound understanding about what had preceded them. They had seen the English Enlightenment and the rise of the English system of rights, the Magna Carta. But before that, most of them were familiar with classical sources and understood what Athens had developed and what it had gone through and how it had lost its democracy. They understood the Roman Republic and how it ultimately collapsed. They had an intimate understanding that we no longer have of much of world history in the early development of democratic systems. And they designed our system to be survivable, to last over time, to adapt, and also to be both responsive, but also to protect the rights not only of minorities, but also of individuals. So it is, I'm not going to suggest a unique system, but it's certainly a system that for much of its existence has been a model for other countries, for developing democracies, and for other systems. We are unique because our system was developed on a blank slate, a continent where we were a country of immigrants defining ourselves, basically coming out of the experience of 13 British colonies, but also with experience from other sources. And the founders had a clear sense that they had to get this right, that they had to design the system right with separation of powers, with limited government, and with an understanding of how democracy would work. We've made major changes since then. We've allowed that system to evolve, but the core principles are important even to this day.
As you go about this project then, trying to get new generations to understand not only the history of the Founding Fathers, but as you just explained, going back for centuries, mechanically, how is your group of former congressmen going about trying to reactivate the process of teaching civics and government to our high school and I'd say even college students?
Well, we are all volunteers, and we have regular meetings. We have reached out and built a coalition which includes other stakeholders, as I've mentioned, and also has built a relationship with the State Department of Education. As time goes on, we expect to offer our time and ourselves to local school districts, to intermediate units, and other entities as this curriculum moves forward.
You mentioned, of course, that this is a bipartisan effort. So in view of that, the State Department of Education, what sort of reception have you had there?
We've had an excellent reception, and we are going to be stepping up that relationship in the immediate future. We're going to be reaching out and meeting again with the Department of Education. They have been enormously receptive because the General Assembly has given them a mandate through Act 35 to move forward and to get this right. And we have a unique set of experiences. We have a unique set of volunteer resources that we can offer to them. On September 17th, Constitution Day, we are right now exploring the possibility of doing events in Philadelphia and in Pittsburgh that would create an opportunity for us to raise the visibility of this overall project.
Certainly keep us apprised of those plans, Phil, so that we can make our audience aware of them. And before we end our conversation here, as you look at the climate that we have now, and of course it's been a number of years now since you served in Congress, it appears to me as an observer of Congress over this whole period that the old way of doing things, perhaps the way that it was meant to be done, where after the election, members from both parties actually somewhat set aside to at least a degree partisanship and began to work together, were able to forge compromise, get things done. Now it seems like there's nonstop politics, nonstop bashing from both sides. Do you think the lack of civics instruction and the fact that a lot of people just don't understand how the system is supposed to work is contributing to the fact that this environment has gone downhill?
There are many contributing factors to the decline of our political culture, but a lack of civics education is certainly one of them, and a lack of civics insights, I think, has contributed to the sense of enemy and the disappointment with the political system. So much of what is going on now focuses on less important issues. A lot of it is personalities, and all of that has trivialized many of the big projects that the country needs to undertake. There are clearly still people who are trying to do the job in the federal and state government, but there is a great deal of frustration, and the erosion of our civic processes has clearly been supported by the fact that people don't know what to expect, and many people who vote don't know how the system is supposed to work.
We have been talking again with former Congressman Phil English about the Pennsylvania Civics Project, a bipartisan effort from former congressmen all across Pennsylvania to reintroduce civics into the curriculum in our high schools and start to teach folks the fundamentals of government. Phil, of course, is with Errant Fox. He's co-chairman of the Government Relations Division. Phil, is there a website or other means that folks could learn more about you, this project, get in touch with you?
They can always track me down at Errant Fox, A-R-E-N-T-F-O-X, a law firm that, among other things, operates in Washington.
Phil English, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Marcellus Shell gas drillers have paid a record amount of money in impact fees over the past year. Just how much? Eric Montardi gets details from Hannah Bowser on this Allegheny Institute report.
Hello and welcome to the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal. I'm Eric Montardi. Joining me today is Hannah Bowser, research assistant at the Allegheny Institute. Hannah, you recently worked on a brief which is available at our website at www.alleghenyinstitute.org on the most recent numbers on the impact fee collections. It's an incredibly important topic. It's a major revenue, but could you give our listeners an explanation of what the impact fee is and how much revenue it brought in 2018?
Yes. So the impact fee is basically a tax on unconventional gas well producers, so those drilling via the fracturing method. And due to the demanding nature of this extraction method, the fee was designed in part as a way to reimburse these local areas. So in 2018, the total impact fee revenue that was generated totaled to $242.9 million.
Okay, and how does that compare to previous years? The fee's been around since 2011, 2012. We've done work on this in the past looking at the collections. How does that compare?
This represents the highest amount collected since collections began in 2011, and it also represents a 15.94% increase from 2017's total.
That's a pretty sizable jump in 1 year's time from 17 to 18. So can you give our listeners an explanation of what accounted for that?
So mainly two things accounted for this jump: the activity of the natural gas industry itself and also a court decision. But first, a June press release from the Pennsylvania Public Utility Commission indicated that this growth was likely due to a large rise in the number of unconventional wells operating. It was an increase of over 1,000 or 12.23% to a total of 9,560 wells. So that was what was going on in the industry. In addition, though, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court resolved a dispute between the commission and unconventional gas well producers over whether or not these low-producing wells, also known as stripper wells, if they had to pay a fee based on the definition.
Okay, so they're basically some kind of clarification of something that was involved in litigation, is what you're saying. And so what did that decision do, or what did it decide, and then what did it result in terms of revenue?
The actual definition of these stripper wells is they are defined as being incapable of producing more than 90,000 cubic feet per day during any calendar month. So when a well was deemed to be a stripper well, the impact fee would be suspended. So the dispute occurred because some producers refused to pay the fee, believing that the well's definition was more extensive than the PUC's interpretation of it. But the court ruled in favor of the commission, which indicated that an additional $8.9 million was collected in fees. Additional money from the court case was allocated to both the counties and municipalities through the Unconventional Gas Well Fund and also through the Marcellus Shale Legacy Fund. So the counties and municipalities received an additional $5.3 million through the Unconventional Gas Well Fund, and the Marcellus Shale Legacy Fund received another $3.5 million. So this brought our total impact revenue fee for 2018 to $251.8 million. So even without the additional money arising from the court decision, total impact fee revenue collected since 2011 surged to just about $1.7 billion.
Okay, so that's a good explanation. So basically the majority of it is just the activity was going on, and then there was the resolution to this court dispute. The money then goes to Harrisburg, and then it's distributed. Hannah, can you give our listeners an idea of how that money gets distributed?
Yes. So after the funds are collected, the money is distributed to counties, municipalities, and several state agencies. And this is all based on Act 13 requirements and the act that instituted the fee. So for 2018, we had $134.7 million from the Unconventional Gas Well Fund that went to counties and municipalities in which these wells were operating. So areas that receive these funds do so based on the number of wells they have. But the money can only be spent on 13 designated categories, such as road repair and stormwater systems. And then we also have the Marcellus Shale Legacy Fund, which $89.8 million was allocated to this fund. And the money distributed from here is based on population and is intended for environmental matters. So all counties in Pennsylvania receive money from this fund, and the minimum distribution is set at $25,000 for the smaller counties. And then state agencies, there are several, but some of them include the Fish and Boat Commission, as well as the Department of Environmental Protection. They received almost $18.4 million in 2018.
Okay, so that basically then totals up to the revenue distribution. So as you pointed out, one of them is based on the activity where there are wells and where there's drilling activity. Then there's a separate allocation that goes to counties based on population, and essentially everybody gets something with a minimum threshold. And then there's the specific state agencies that get an allocation from the money. Let's move a little bit more locally here to the Pittsburgh metro area. We have seven counties, so Allegheny being the largest, but there's a lot of drilling activity that's going on in a nearby county. So can you give our listeners an idea of, out of that 2018 distribution, what was how did that play out in the Pittsburgh metro area?
The Pittsburgh metro area in total accounts for almost 3,000 wells, and thus receives a total of $18.5 million in distributions. Now, Washington County has not only the most wells in its region, but also statewide, with 1,655 wells total. And so far, it receives the most money, with $8.4 million in 2018. Now, for the rest of the counties, Allegheny County is a smaller set of wells, only 130, and it accounts for $1.9 million. Armstrong County has 112 wells and accounts for $1.5 million. Beaver has only one more, 113 wells, and receives $727,512 in distribution. Butler has quite more, 500 wells, and they're allocated $3.1 million. Fayette has 224 wells and is allocated $1.2 million. And Westmoreland has 240 wells and is allocated $1.6 million. But by far, Washington has the most wells and receives the most money.
Yeah, and as you pointed out earlier, you know, with the drilling activity, that if, you know, statewide, the count is up to like over 9,500 wells, and then if Washington County has 1,600 of those, and then the metro area combined, we're talking like almost a third, right? I mean, it's like close to 3,000 of the wells in the Pittsburgh metro area. That's interesting stuff, Hannah. For more on this topic, you can visit our website at www.AlleghenyInstitute.org. You can follow us on Twitter. For Hannah Bowser, this is Eric Montardi, and this has been the Allegheny Institute Report on the Lincoln Institute Radio Journal.
Pennsylvania's tax structure needs a complete overhaul. So says Ashley Klingensmith from Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania, who talks about it on this Lincoln Radio Journal commentary.
At Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania, we are committed to breaking down barriers that stand in the way of Pennsylvanians improving their lives, empowering all Pennsylvanians to pursue their dreams and unlock their potential. Motivates our advocacy and prioritization of policy goals. With this in mind, we're going to call on the legislature and governor to streamline and simplify our tax code to not only make our Commonwealth more competitive, but make our tax system one that recognizes Pennsylvanians have an inherent right to the fruits of their labor. The Federal Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017 saved the average Pennsylvanian taxpayer $1,169 on their federal income taxes last year. Last week, Franklin and Marshall released a poll which found that 61% of registered voters in Pennsylvania believe the state's tax system needs a fundamental overhaul. The time to act is now. In crafting comprehensive tax reform, lawmakers should focus on three basic principles to guide their efforts. It should be competitive. At 9.99%, we have one of the highest corporate tax rates in the country. Such a high rate makes us less competitive with other states as well as internationally. Governor Wolf even agrees. He included a plan in his budget to actually reduce the CNIT to 5.99% by 2024. Lawmakers should lower our corporate rate so Pennsylvania businesses can compete and our economy can thrive and grow. Second, keep it simple. The individual side of Pennsylvania's tax code already has a desirably low and flat 3.07% income tax rate. However, there are complexities that should be addressed and simplified as part of a larger tax reform package. For example, Pennsylvania should eliminate its confusing and outdated income classification system. Lawmakers should also consider options for simplifying tax authority, such as addressing the number and variety of allowable local taxing authorities and adopt simple, clear assessment cycles for real property taxes. Third, make it fair. The state of Pennsylvania gives away hundreds of millions of taxpayer dollars in corporate welfare each year, much of that coming through subsidies. The government should not be picking winners and losers in the tax code. Lawmakers should review and eliminate the existing business tax credits in favor of lowering the overall corporate tax rate, which would create a more level playing field for PA businesses when it comes to their tax liability. These are the core principles that lawmakers should be focused on as they work to develop tax reform legislation this season. But there are two additional things that policymakers should keep in mind as well. First, there should be no net increase in taxes. And second, they should keep it clean. Don't load up this bill with unnecessary and unrelated issues. We do not need a reason for the PA Supreme Court to find the legislation unconstitutional. Legislative leaders have a unique opportunity to harness AFP Pennsylvania's tax reform principles to make our Commonwealth one that thrives and that attracts businesses and individuals who work for them, not because of tax handouts or loopholes, but because of a truly competitive free market environment. Our staff and activists will be lobbying for comprehensive tax reform in their communities and under the dome in the coming days and months. We encourage listeners to talk to their representative and senator and let them know now is the time for bold vision and leadership in our Commonwealth. I'm Ashley Klingensmith, State Director with Americans for Prosperity Pennsylvania. You can find us on Twitter at AFP Pennsylvania, on Facebook by searching for at PAAFP, and on our website, AmericansForProsperity.org.
If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 24 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WRJV-FM in Breezewood, WRVI-FM in St. Mary's, along with WBFD-FM in Bedford, Pennsylvania. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations. They include the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, and the Worrell Foundation of Carlisle. All of them have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania.